Give until it's built. It's episode 35 of For Our Edification. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of For Our Edification. I'm Eddie Francis, and For Our Edification is your dose of personal leadership goodness. For Our Edification is brought to you by Edify Ventures, LLC, brand strategy and experiences. Learn more at edifyventuresnola.com. And you can get past episodes of For Our Edification at eddiefrancis.com. Also, you can go to YouTube to get some past episodes. And of course, you can get For Our Edification wherever you get your podcasts. August is Black Philanthropy Month, and its roots go back to 2001, but it actually launched in 2011 with a global summit to commemorate the United Nations Year and Decade of People of African Descent. The 2023 theme is Love in Action. You want to find out more about Black Philanthropy Month? You can go to the show notes. But there's one group in Dallas that actively practices Black philanthropy. They're called the Heritage Giving Fund. Halima knows all about them. I thought it would be great, though, to pay a visit to one of his founders, Akilah Wallace. She joins us on this episode of For Our Edification. The views and opinions expressed on For Our Edification do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the hosts, guests, or any entities with which we are affiliated. Akilah Wallace founded Heritage Giving Fund with Francois Brooker-Drew, and someone that you might know associated with the podcast, Halima Leak Francis. During Black Philanthropy Month in 2017, the three women and the other founding members came together, as the mission goes, to encourage philanthropy in the Black community, to contribute in a strategic and meaningful way, and to bring a new source of funding to nonprofit organizations serving Black women and girls throughout the state of Texas. And to date, Heritage has awarded more than $100,000 in grants. Akilah is also the principal consultant of Taylor Wallace Social Impact Consultant. And Akilah, welcome to For Our Edification. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm glad doing good. It is always good to talk to you. I couldn't let Black Philanthropy Month pass without doing a Black Philanthropy Month interview. It's something that means a lot to Halima, means a lot to me. And I thought to myself, self, why don't I ask Akilah about this stuff? Because of the work that Heritage has done. So, first of all, I mean, let's find out about you, because you're like Queen Awesomeness and all this other good stuff. So talk about what it is that you do and what got you interested in the work that you're doing right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I really do appreciate this opportunity to speak during Black Philanthropy Month. So what got me into this work? So one, I'm a career nonprofit executive. Most notably, I've been recognized for my work as a fund development expert, so a fundraiser, and a change agent in the philanthropic sector here in North Texas, as well as nationally. So as you mentioned, you know, I work as a principal consultant for a consulting company I started really working it full time this year. And that is what pays my bills, supporting area nonprofits with not only their fund development plans and strategies, but ultimately really looking at their nonprofit executive infrastructure and wanting to, you know, look for gaps and as well as opportunities for improving systems, especially within operations, finance, programs, and ultimately how it correlates to the fund development goals and revenue goals for the organization. And so go ahead.
No, so all right. So wait, let's put your expertise to work really, really quickly, because the thing I love to do with this podcast is I love to talk about personal leadership. And a lot of people who start nonprofits, they do it because they are into the cause. I mean, it's the cause that counts to them. Yes. So when you consult with folks, what's one thing that you feel that when you get to the founder of the nonprofit, the executive director of the nonprofit, what's one thing that you find you have to stop and say, okay, let's have a conversation about moving your nonprofit forward? What does that conversation sound like sometimes?
Well, I'll say what I'm discovering is that there's some consistency in the way that, you know, the heart is leading nonprofit founders and leaders, and ultimately, you know, them believing that that is, you know, what's going to help sell the dream and as well as mostly unlock the dollars that are really needed. But what I'm discovering is that also ultimately, when I start asking questions about budgets, that there's a disconnect there. So for me, I'm really interested in the ways that, you know, nonprofits lean more into like an initial plan that is based on like true numbers and realistic numbers that is driving you and how you build out your programs, because ultimately people want to do everything under the sun because their heart is, you know, pulling them towards it. And ultimately, I mean, the need is great in the community, right? But when it comes down to funding that work, that's where often there's a disconnect. So for me, it's about how do we align, you know, realistic budgets that is on your expense side and really thinking about what it is that you truly need to be successful so that you can unlock the revenue streams that you need.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting when you start to dig into the business part of the nonprofit. And, you know, with me having worked in higher education, it works the same way a lot of times. You know, in higher education, there's so many people who are just, they're into the cause, they're into the mission. We do this because we got to get these kids through, we got to educate them. And I'm the marketing dude, you know, I'm the butthole marketing dude who walks into the room and I'm just like, yeah, but this academic program has like 5 people in it. And the other academic program has like 150 people in it.
Yeah.
We got to make sense of what we're doing right here. And oh, by the way, the price point is just a little high. So,
absolutely.
Let's make sense of what they're doing.
I mean, you're touching on it. I mean, ultimately, let's be realistic. And I mean, still committed and passionate. You don't want to take away from that. And you want the people who you're serving to be, you know, the driver for why you show up each day. But also at the same time, especially for Black folks in philanthropy, we can reduce, you know, at least hopefully reduce some stress, some frustration by just being more intentional about the efficiencies and our effectiveness by way of how we really invest that initial time when you're in the founding stage or even as you like kind of got to just go right into it, that you begin to invest and have people on your teams, whether that's board members or you get consultants or, you know, staff, however that looks, who's also building the infrastructure at the same time. Yeah. Everything, you know, how is it talking to one another? How, you know, programs, what are they doing? Are they, you know, producing the outcomes and the metrics that's going to help to go along with the story? Because yes, people want to, you know, pull on hearts, you know, like, yes, this is what happened with this young person or this, you know, this community group, you know, through a story. But ultimately, when it comes to fundraising, you need to align that story with some actual impact. And that impact is often how you get that is by way of having efficiencies in your systems and processes. So you can go back and say, ah, that's right. We were documenting how many people we served and, you know, and the outcomes that came out of that service. So. That's my little tea.
so wait, but you know what? Let me ask you another really important question. And I think this is extraordinarily important. And this is going to lead into the conversation about heritage, especially when you're dealing with nonprofits that are led by Black folks. Yes. One of the things I found, I worked at 3 HBCUs. And one of the things that I found was a conversation I had to have a lot of time with us was we can have it both ways. You know, we don't have to choose one thing or the other thing. Yeah. We can have mission and we can have revenue results. We can have both of these things. And I don't, and it just seems to me, and I, tell me if this is your experience, that in the Black community, something that we kind of struggle with is that we think we got to make a hard choice when sometimes we don't have to make a hard choice. We just have to kind of dream big and think big. And we do have to make a sacrifice to meet the goal. But we can have it both ways. And on top, and I would say on top of that, we deserve to have it both ways. Do you find that sometimes you have to have that conversation with folks to say, hey, listen, no, don't turn this into a, you know, don't turn this into a tragedy. You know, you didn't like the business news, but that doesn't mean it's a tragedy. That just means we got a little bit more work to do and we're going to get there. Do you find that you have to have that conversation sometimes?
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, I really invest intentional time and resources into building trust with the nonprofit leaders. I mean, we come, you know, to any body of work already holding a variety of, you know, experiences with oppression, you know, knowing that we're up against, you know, systems of, you know, all the systems, right? All the isms. And so sometimes you can already come in defeated and or, you know, with a chip on your shoulder because you feel like you just have so much to prove to, you know, to whomever that may be, right? Whether it's
and you just feel that sting. You feel that sting, yeah.
Yes, but for me, I'm like, let's build some trust in that ultimately understanding that the questions I'm going to be asking of you, your board, your team members, or whoever, you know, the key stakeholders are that's involved in, you know, our relationship and our process and understanding that I'm here to move us all along. I have a genuine, authentic, deep love for our people, for our communities. And, but also I've had the opportunity to work in other spaces and I've seen how non-Black leaders have led, how they raise money, how they, you know, service their programs and their operations. And so I've seen examples of what has worked very well and some examples of where we have contributed to our own struggle. And so for me, it's about the trust building and ultimately, and even in that, as much as I can say it 50 million times, I'm not here to judge. So when I'm asking a question and your response, and you know in your heart that the answer is no, I don't have it. And likely no, I didn't even know that was something I needed to have. And I don't even know where to start to be okay with saying that or saying, yes, we do. But then once you give me access to it and I see that it's like kind of all wonky and just, you know, just not right, that you don't take offense to, you know, the recommendations and the counsel and guidance that's given to you and, you know, recommendations on how to move towards improvement. Because ultimately, we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And whether, you know, I don't work for you and it's not, I'm not the founder and it's not my mission, you know, and I get that. And it may not even necessarily be a community that I'm directly impacted by or, you know, with. However, I'm here to serve and I'm here to serve with you. So I would also, you know, suggest the ways in which we like give ourselves grace, you know, and understand that it's okay whether, and this is goes for even organizations that have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Because I just want to make sure this isn't just about newfound, you know, new small grassroots organizations. This can apply to organizations that have been in existence for quite some time. And that can be large, you know, institutions, you know, with several, you know, affiliates and chapters across the country, right? It can go across the board in the ways of which like opportunities for improvement can always show up. And also the ways that you can build upon your successes. And I'm, you know, there to, you know, partner with organizations to help them, you know, come up with that great case for support so they can unlock the revenue that they need.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I absolutely loved when I got a chance to watch Heritage at Work a couple of times and just talking to Halima is I love how Heritage is such an engine of empowerment. And I love the approach that Heritage has. So let's, first of all, I mean, for folks who are not in North Texas and who have not had the privilege to learn about Heritage, first of all, with you, you were the main voice behind getting this thing started. So let's talk about what Heritage is and why the work of Heritage is so important.
Yeah. So thank you. I appreciate that. So grateful that we, you know, but by me working for a community foundation and being exposed to not only the fundraising side and seeing, you know, who, you know, was being introduced and invited to be a part of, you know, giving opportunities. There was also the other side on the grant making side where, you know, also was a witness to, you know, kind of seeing who was getting funding and seeing, you know, some patterns as well as the ways in which there were some gaps. And so for Heritage, you know, I'm really proud and, you know, to stand with the over 80 plus women, Black women who have contributed to the Giving Circle since 2017. And ultimately being, you know, recognized as a national model for collective giving. And so the Giving Circle, you know, we were founded in response to a regional disregard for Black women in the nonprofit sector, you know, and that ultimately contributed to inequitable funding opportunities and philanthropic support. It silenced the leadership and perspectives of Black women led nonprofits and, you know, exacerbated, you know, false, look, I can't even say the word. exacerbated false narratives about Black communities, including our desires and our needs, you know, by way of this. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we showed up and brought together Black women who will pull our individual resources together for the purpose of us making decisions around, one, not only, you know, who would get access to our resources by way of our funding, as well as our continued grantee support, but ultimately influencing just the way that the process took place and helping to shape, you know, the ways in which grant making decisions would take place, not only within our given circle, but ultimately creating a ripple effect for other, you know, funders in not only in North Texas, but also in other spaces. And so, you know, we show up with very intentionally with the equity and gendered lens. And we're committed to engaging Black women of varying economic status and backgrounds, because also we recognize that, you know, the word philanthropy sometimes can be daunting and or intimidating. And so we wanted to create an opportunity for Black women who may not have seen themselves as a philanthropist per se, or even recognize that that was something they were already doing, or if, you know, they really wanted to be more strategic and intentional, that this was a space where you could, you know, a safe space for you to be able to show up with your dollars, but as well as your voice and helping to, you know, influence the sector and, you know, in a very intentional and bold way.
You're listening to For Our Edification. We're talking to Akilah Wallace. She is one of the founders of Heritage Giving Fund, which is based in Dallas. And also she is the principal consultant of Taylor Wallace Social Impact Consulting. So for you personally, what has been one of the most rewarding parts or one of the most rewarding experiences when it comes to being a part of Heritage?
Yeah. So as I, you know, mentioned, I mean, one, the sisterhood with all these really amazing women, many of whom I may not have encountered in other spaces because we just may have been in different industries. But if I had to pinpoint like one in particular, one of the most rewarding experiences has been knowing that our membership has not only helped to raise and invest over $100,000 for Black women and girls, but the fact that our platform has been leveraged, you know, our power and our influence has ultimately helped to direct millions of dollars of philanthropic support to our, not only our 16 grantee partners. So those are the 16 organizations that we funded within this 6-year time period. But also, you know, we're pretty sure that, you know, there's many more organizations and leaders who have been beneficiaries of increased funding or consideration, opportunities to speak in panels, especially during the global pandemic. You know, we had different groups and individual funders, you know, some traditional ones reaching out to us to ask us, you know, who should we, you know, invite, you know, that's more grassroots organizations and Black women led organizations and voices to speak in a variety of different panels and, you know, discussions, or contributing to, you know, kind of backdoor discussions with white funders around, like, you know, calling them in and inviting them, you know, calling them out and in around the ways that there's been significant inequities in funding. So that is what has been most rewarding for me, is knowing that not only, you know, yes, the money is great, and we're grateful, you know, for every single dollar that individuals, as well as, you know, not just our members, but even supporters and friends of the Giving Circle, that anyone can go and sow a seed that is pooled together with all of ours for grant making purposes. But ultimately, the fact that it has created this really incredible and powerful movement, I've called it that. And, you know, when I speak to, you know, my Heritage sisters and say, you know, when you join us, you're a part of a movement that's very intentional about not only increasing funding, but also elevating the voices of Black women and girls in leaders, leadership roles throughout the nonprofit sector, but also, you know, helping to shape the narrative about us as a people, about our communities, and helping to drive resources to pockets of North Texas that may have been overlooked or really was only researched per se, versus like folks who's like, nah, let me show up with dollars, but also let me look into other organizations that maybe they need board members, or they're looking for volunteers, or they need in-kind donations. So yeah, it's created this magnificent ripple effect that I'm really proud of, and has been the most rewarding for me.
You know, I'm going to say something that's going to make me that I'm not going to be very popular in my hometown for saying this. But anybody who knows me knows that I don't have a problem with that. And so one of the unfortunate things that happens, and Halima and I actually had this conversation not too long ago, because it was something that it's a source of frustration for her. And with me being a native of New Orleans, it's a source of frustration for me, too. Unfortunately, even in the nonprofit sector, there seems to be this spirit of competition, you know, folks just kind of going at each other. There's one nonprofit I can think about right now. We had the executive director on this podcast. He's doing outstanding work. But for whatever people, the attitude is, well, he's getting all the money. He's just getting all the money. And I'm just like, he's not getting all the money. No, trust me, he's not getting all of it. Right. There's a lot out there.
Abundance.
And you can have it too. Yes. But take your focus off of him and mind a business that pays you and you'll be fine. But Heritage, one of the things I enjoy looking at from afar, because I follow you on social media, is how y'all support each other. Like, y'all are seriously, y'all really do have this sisterhood effect where you seem to be the wind behind each other's back. I mean, what keeps that motivation going for y'all?
Oh, man, what keeps that motivation? I think there's a significant portion of us who are, the members are represented by women who actually work in the industry.
Y'all know what's at stake.
Yes.
Yeah.
That part. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? So it's kind of different, like, you know, for those who, you know, maybe work in other industries and, you know, there's the community or service aspect of your life and your values and family values and individual as well as even, you know, the ways in which, like, you know, the corporation you work for and those opportunities for you to show up collectively as colleagues. Right. But for us, you know, many of us, you know, especially our majority of our founding members, we come from the sector. Many of our members are executive directors of organizations. We're chief development officers. We're program officers. You know, we have various roles within the sector or working for other funders and, you know, foundations and corporate giving programs. So because of that, we have a very, you know, unique perspective on what is working, what isn't working, or just even the thoughtfulness around the types of questions that need to be answered or for us as a body to come together and wrestle with and consider, that then contributes to the type of programs or, you know, topics that we are discussing through our philanthropy empowerment sessions or, you know, the intentionality of, like, you know, Dr. Francois Booker Drew. And when, you know, she was like, from her lens, she was like, not only are we going to fund these nonprofits, but we're going to, you know, there was a moment where it was like, we're going to match them up and be like mentors to them. We created, you know, you know, very intentional spaces to provide training and development with those organizations. And then during the global pandemic, we expanded it further by doing web series that are available. Those recordings are on our YouTube. So it's that level of energy and accountability to not only to the community, but also to one another, because also we know that when you shine, I shine.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if you're not shining, but I'm shining, then it's just not right. And
does it even make sense? Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? I need all of us to be in this together, because ultimately it's about our communities. We want our babies to be great. We're mothers, we're sisters, we're daughters, right? We're community influencers and change agents. We're business owners. We're all of the things. And so all of that shows up in the way that, like, we build together. We want to grow together. We challenge each other. I mean, we took a little over a year off because members following the pandemic, when we was like, many of us were on the front lines of all the things, right? We're directly impacted, right? That they was like, yo, we got to take a break, right? And not because we don't want to continue to invest in Black women and girls, but individually and as a collective body, we are traumatized. We are harmed. Yeah. And we need rest. And so we took that time. Mm-hmm. And then in that same period, there was a smaller group of our members who decided that, you know what, let's go through a strategic planning process. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for those women who said, you know, while the majority are, you know, kind of prioritizing everything else going on in their life. We want to sit and survey our members. We want to, you know, kind of do some research based on, you know, what's happening in the industry and make some recommendations for how, you know, as a given circle, we want to continue, but how we will show up a little different. And one example is, as much as we know about nonprofit infrastructures, and again, that's what I do as a consultant, in the founding of the given circle, I mean, we just went and we did the thing, but we also had to realize that there was some inefficiencies within arts infrastructure and systems and processes, and who was holding, you know, certain, a lot more bodies of work and maintaining social media and, you know, and all the things behind the scenes. And also the ways that we like, you know what, we also could be, you know, more intentional about diversifying our revenue streams in the same way that we ask others to do the same. So anyway, so it's through all of that, through our relationships and lived experiences that ultimately has shown up in the way that we lead, the way that we advocate, and the way that we really just love on one another and the community as a whole.
All right, so let's put your Black Philanthropy hat on, your Black Philanthropy Month hat on, okay? So you got the everyday person who is out there right now, and they hear about philanthropy. And, of course, you know, the everyday person, when they hear philanthropy, of course, they think, well, I don't have a whole lot of money, so I can't, you know, blah, 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 right? So we know how that goes. And I was that person. Before I met Halima, I was that person, right? As we actually fleshed out on one of the episodes of the podcast, you know, there's so much more to Black philanthropy than dollars, right? Yes. So from your perspective, in celebration of Black Philanthropy Month, what do you think the everyday person needs to understand about the impact about how philanthropy is practiced specifically in a Black community?
I will start by us recognizing and acknowledging that even the smallest acts of kindness equate to philanthropy. For people to center the fact that the word philanthropy is the love of humanity. So at the center of it is love. And as Black people, for a variety of, you know, the many faith traditions that we bring as our wholeness, love is generally at the center of every belief system or non-belief system, honestly. And so for this year's Black Philanthropy Month, the theme is love in action. And guess what? That's Black folks all day, every day.
We're constantly singing about love, writing poetry, and doing all that stuff.
The words, right. And even, you know, the words may not even necessarily show, you know, we've heard culturally in the way that folks can say, I may not have heard I love you, per se, from certain family members or, you know, from community members. But love shows up in action for us. And so, you know, philanthropy for the everyday person is ultimately how you show your love through your actions. And think about it. That could be from when you provided a meal for the bereaved and shut in to our wonderful people who choose to say, I'm going to mentor a young person, or I'm going to show up differently for my niece or nephew because I see that my, you know, my family member is struggling, or, you know, not necessarily struggling, but maybe just overwhelmed. Just, it's just a lot, right? And here I am, a single individual, and I have a lot more capacity. So you know what? I'm just going to show up by way of, you know, hey, I can go pick them up from practice, you know, from their, you know, their orchestra practice, right? Or, you know, whatever it is. So for us, it's through the actions and as well as the dollars. As well as even as we think about you in marketing, in these platforms like this, this is an opportunity to show your love through action and giving business owners and various leaders and voices an opportunity to spread the good news about their products and services or, you know, or what they're doing in the world. This is love in action. This is a way of which different industries show up. You know, if there's a person who's a content creator and you know what, and you're really good at creating reels and streams and all that stuff, and you know that there's a young person in your town who people are saying is possibly, you know, the next up and coming person in said, you know, athleticism or, you know, theater or, you know, whatever the case may be, reach out to that young person and be like, hey, maybe I can, you know, do some reels for you or help you, you know, come record you as you're performing and chopping and screwing it together to help you build your TikTok platform, right? So there's all the unique and special ways that the everyday person can do that. And when I think about, you know, some other opportunities, I mean, look, I've made a list. You may, you know, just a couple examples, right? Mm-hmm. Contact an area school and offer to pay a student's lunch balance. Okay. Wow. I know people say, you know, you be at, you know, the drive through and you pay it, you know, for the person in front of you, but right. But we mm-hmm. have young people in our community, in our families who are in need. Luckily there's many school districts. I know here in Texas, you know, where they're starting to cover, breakfast and lunch for students. So that may not be. So check and see whether that's a service in your community, but do something as simple as that. Right. And again, no one has to know that you did it. Just do it.
Right. Right.
You know, clean out your closet and donate your gently used clothes to a resale store. Maybe gather a group of friends and clean up the yard of an elderly neighbor or, mm-hmm. you know, your neighborhood park. Right. For some, I just joined my son's PTA, right? And baby, this president has a list of things that is needed, you know, by what, you know, that students need as well as that their parent needs. So, you know, consider reaching out to some PTAs and considering donating some products or services to support them. You know, folks like, hey, we just need T-shirts. We need lanyards, or the young people need, you know, whatever. Right. We have back to school drives, but also, you know, there's other elements of needs beyond just, you know, book bags and those supplies, as well as, you know, ultimately, I'm always going to end with, you know, whatever you have that's, you know, considered to be, you know, kind of that extra resource. Like, you know, we don't want you going hungry to help another, but ultimately, you know, if you're unable to donate your time and tangible resources that you may have available that you can, you know, provide as an in-kind, you know, please consider donating dollars. And that could be $10, $50, $100, whatever you consider to be meaningful to you. And ultimately select a cause that mm-hmm. is either meaningful to you and or possibly in honor or memory of a loved one. So mm-hmm. you may think, well, I don't know, you know, it wasn't a big deal. You know, I can't think of anything, but you know what? My grandmother always, you know, went down to a certain, you know, soup kitchen and, you know, and helped to serve food there. Make a contribution in honor of your grandmother. And so, yeah, these are just little ways, you know, that doesn't require you to, I was going to say write a check, but no one writes a check anymore, but, you know, set up your automatic payment through your bank account or, you know, ACH. So, yeah.
No, you'd be surprised who's still right. So, Akilah, listen, I was in a frat chapter meeting the other night, and one of the brothers in the room, he was like, I need to write a check. Can I write a check? I'm writing a check. And meant he was writing a check.
And that's perfectly fine, because me, as on the receipt, I would have took that check, pulled out my phone, logged into that bank app, took that picture, uploaded front and back, and it's clearing right now.
But you know what really strikes me, though? It strikes me that in our community, it hit me as you were talking, that in our community, the way philanthropy is practiced a lot of times is the intention of relieving pressure, the pressure in someone else's life. Like that one day that you pick up a kid from school and you say, listen, I got it. I'll go pick your kid up. You go do this. Yeah. And you find out later that this was a job interview. You know, and it was the only time they could do that interview, you know, and you didn't ask what you got going on. They just came. You said, could you get my son? It's like, yeah, I got you. I get your son. Mm-hmm. And then later on, you find out that you just helped somebody get a job, you know, that they needed, you know.
Absolutely. And maybe so that time while you were with that young person, when you picked them up and you was with them and you were having small talk and conversation with them, or maybe you took them to grab something to eat. And, you know, I know with some kids, you know, when it's not your child, folks, you know, like, you want some fast food or whatever. And then that child could be like, yes, you know, I'm always just cooking. I don't ever get the fast food, right? That could really mean something to that child. But just that small talk and just them having, you know, another person to communicate with and, you know, maybe open up in a way that, you know, sometimes you young people aren't willing to do with those who are closest to them, that then creates another element of way that you've served, that you've shown up with love and action, the way that you've been philanthropic, mm-hmm. Without it being, you know, all intentional or, you know, and also, you know, just one last thing, y'all. I mean, and I get it. I have a platform and marketing community. Often in this new world, you know, we post and, you know, everything is for public consumption, but, you know, just have some level of discernment to, you know, be mindful of, you know, if and when it should be shared on these public platforms and being mindful of putting youth, you know, out. But also, you know, check your heart as to you know, why you're doing something.
I was just about someone. To mention that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, making sure your intentions are in the right place and, you know, and ultimately who's at the center of it. And asking, you know, in me doing this, am I likely contributing to additional harm? Because also, I mean, that's a real thing. I mean, you know, I got my African garb on. You know, I mean, white savior is mentality is real, and it mm-hmm. can and has been transferred to non-white people as well. Mm-hmm. And so, we have to be mindful of the ways that, like, we check ourselves and how we show up in spaces and how we're being protective of one mm-hmm. another. And I'm especially sensitive when it comes to young people and, mm-hmm. you know, not expecting that you should have access to folks. Like, mm-hmm. you heard my recommendation with the young, starting off with pay for a young person's lunch. I did not say, you know, show up to the school and, you know, and demand that you get to facilitate tutoring or training. That may be a need, but check with them, you know what I mean, with the source, because many more organizations, if they are, or they should be, are being more mindful of like who they bring around people, as well as those who may be directly impacted, right? You can go into spaces, you know, where it's, you know, majority formerly incarcerated folks, and you're using language that is, you know, like very disrespectful or inconsiderate of their perspective and their experience and what they've been through. So just make sure you also, you know, do your pre-work. Do your research, do your training, get familiar with appropriate language and get an understanding of the space that you're going to be in. Because also, even those who may have the best intentions can do more harm than good. So I also challenge folks that as you're wanting to, you know, be great and serve and be philanthropic during Black Philanthropy Month and really Black Philanthropy is 365, that, you know, we hold ourselves accountable and, you know, that just because we are Black and in Black spaces doesn't mean that you're safe and that you're, you know, that you are good for, you know, for others. So, yeah.
I could do a whole podcast episode on that one because look, I have a lot of thoughts about that from the HBCU space. And I will say this. I will say this because I got to say it because it's on my heart and I got to get it off because what you said is just really important. And I will say that this is really, I think, going in with a lack of intention and not going in with a servant leader mindset. And and I see us do it to each other. But when you get these people who come into HBCUs in leadership and they come in with the attitude of, I got to straighten y'all out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you don't have to straighten anybody out. What you have to do is you have to come in and serve. and if your intention is to make things better, then we need to talk about how you can do that without it turning into some sort of penalty, you know? Yeah. And I remember one thing, you know, a lot of HBCUs have this obsession with having PR and media attention, and it drives me nuts. And I really think it comes from this mentality of, honestly, it comes from a stance of weakness because it's we need. Mm-hmm. And the point I'm making and what goes along with this point was I've had media outlets reach out to me and it's been Black folks and they have come with this attitude of, well, y'all know y'all need the exposure. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh,
you and I being a philanthropist right now, you are not giving me something I can't get on my own. Okay. Mm-hmm. So first of all, no, I'm not going to do the interview, right? I'm not going to get my president and drag my president to the interview, but the way you're coming at me is not the way you think you're coming at me. You know, the way you're coming at me is you are coming at me with this attitude of lack, as if I'm lacking something and you are so benevolent to give it to me. And that's not helping the situation. And I see the same attitude when you have alumni who write a check for $50, and yes, the institution is grateful for the $50. But when the check is written in the spirit of, well, y'all know y'all need it, it's like, well, hold on. Whoa. I don't know if I want your funky check, because this is a funky check. You know, this check got some bad juju on it. You know, but if it's written in the spirit of, I know it's $50, but I love my alma mater, that's a whole different approach to me. And that is an alum I was most likely to say, well, cool, you know, let's have a conversation about what it is you're doing at life after your institution. You know, I see you just wrote all of your heart in that $50. Yeah. So maybe we can do something like take a picture with you on social media and da 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 and da 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 da. And so that I think in our community, going back to your point about intention, I think the way we approach each other with intention matters a lot, whether it's a business transaction or it's philanthropy or if it's leadership. I think this point of intention you made is extremely important about how we reach each other and how we intend to either pull each other up or how we unintentionally push each other down. So I don't know if all that even made sense, but
no, it made absolute sense, Eddie. So what came to mind for me, and you touched on it, is that for the person who is seeking to give, whatever that is, time, talent, treasure, you know, testimony, truth, tithes, right? All the T's, that you've done your due diligence to listen and hear from the recipient, to be very clear about what it is that they truly want or need, and don't show up with your assumptions, your bias, or just, you know, like you said, this kind of, well, I know you need this. Well, no. And let's, you know, like,
and don't show up with your ego either. Don't show up with your ego. Yeah, we don't need your ego.
Yeah, that part, right? So do your due diligence in hearing and listening from the recipient to ensure that you're in alignment with one another, because also what you don't want is for you to be assuming that they need this particular thing, dollar, for one particular purpose, and then they use it for something else, and now you're in your feelings because you're like, well, I thought it was going towards this. Well, you didn't even clarify, you know, I mean, you know, have that level of discussion. But also, I want to put that on the flip side, I have heard that so many times.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Put it on the flip side, because also you need to be mindful that, like, sometimes folks be trying to restrict dollars that really shouldn't be restricted. Like, it's not that. Like, just go ahead and give that and allow them to use it for their greatest need or whatever their intentional need is in that moment. But also, I want to put some responsibility, you know, it's a double-ended responsibility from that, also back on the recipient. Yeah. That they are, you know, you have a responsibility to be clearly communicating what your need is and being honest about that. And when you're in conversations with a potential donor, funder, you know, community stakeholder, you know, community member, someone who's potentially going to be an investor and whatever that looks like, that you're honest about what it is that you truly want and need. So when you make that ask, there's connection, and being okay with when there isn't. And being okay with saying no to, like, you know, a source, a resource, and or the actual resource itself, or the resource from whom it is coming from, because it is not in an alignment with your mission, your vision, and or, you know, your objectives. Because also, you know, there's this interesting thing where folks are taking money, and then on the back end, they come into consultants like me, and trying to figure out how they're going to make this thing work or make it fit. And you're like, well, wait a minute. You don't even do that type of work. Or the thing that you took it for, that doesn't even exist right now. So now you're trying to make it a thing. And this is creating unnecessary harm for likely the staff, or let me say mm-hmm. this, the frontline folks who got to actually execute on the thing. Because oftentimes yeah. the leaders just take the money and then, you know, that's their job to go make the ask and get the money. But it's other folks in other departments and other, you know, areas of the organization or company who actually have to deliver on it and execute. Mm-hmm. And now you got them running around trying to create a whole new thing, and you're taking them away from what was already bought into, invested in, and likely that everyone had agreed upon was really and truly a priority. And now mm-hmm. you shifted the focus to something else because of some donor expectations or, you know, their interests. And so, again, I just want to name the ways that that's twofold, that mm-hmm, it's the responsibility mm-hmm. of you as the philanthropist, as the, you know, community person who wants to partner with said entity for greater good and with right intentions, that you've made sure that there's an alignment, and for that person who's on the recipient side, that they've done that same level of due diligence and, you know, see this as a partnership and not just like a, hey, well, let me just get it from you and we'll figure it out on the other side because we just need the money. Like, no, let's go about this the right way, because again, philanthropy is about love and action. And is that rooted in love or greed?
Last question I got to ask you. Yes. How have you personally grown from the leadership that you have done, the work you've done with Heritage, everything? How have you personally grown?
Man, how have I personally grown? I mean, in so many ways. I mean, let me say this. I mean, I've been able to build a very successful career off of this, or not off of this per se, you know what I mean? But also but by way of my intentional work and service in this industry. I mean, previously I was in sales and in marketing and advertising sales, right? And I could have very well been, you know, just as successful and probably made a lot more money had I stayed down that lane. However, man, being able to align who I truly am, and that is I'm an empath. I'm a Cancer child. I just love, and you know what I mean? And it gets in the way sometimes of my leadership. I've written about it. you know, look it up. There's an article about empathetic leadership or leading, you know, with empathetic leadership, that it can be a crutch at the same time. But
yeah,
it has helped me to be who I authentically am and who I believe that God had, you know, birthed me to be. It allows me to bring all the attributes of, you know, who I am that I've inherited by way of my family, you know, their influence, the DNA, bloodline, and also the gifts that's, you know, gift of gab, talker, you know, not afraid of anybody, you know, let's get, you know, sales, you know, attitude, business attitude, and mesh it all together for greater good. And so, yeah, and then, so I've been able to build a career, be able to take care of my two sons, you know, as a, you know, an unmarried woman, you know, through all these years, and be an example for them, which has been most important for me, and ultimately creating a legacy that they and my future, you know, grandchildren, greats, and all them will be able to build upon as well. So,
well, Akilah, you know, I appreciate you. You my girl. So it's really cool having you. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Yes. Akilah Wallace, she is the founder of Heritage Giving Fund. Also, she is a principal consultant of Taylor Wallace Social Impact Consulting. Akilah, thank you so much for joining me on For Our Edification.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Eddie. Appreciate you. Tell Halima I said hey.
So many thanks to Akilah Wallace for joining me on For Our Edification. You can check out past episodes by going to eddiefrancis.com. You can also go to YouTube. And of course, you can get For Our Edification wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, I'm only asking you to do three things for me. Download, give feedback, and share. I'm Eddie Francis for Dr. Halima Lee Francis. Thank you for joining me on this episode of For Our Edification.